Welcome. You're listening to Lift Your Spirits with Dina Marie every Friday here on 1150 AM KKNW. I'll be introducing you to fascinating people, fun places to visit, and activities that are guaranteed to lift your spirits. Just hearing that song today, I almost cried, Nate. I'm so proud of that song. I really am.
And it's no stranger to me because last time I filled into your show, we had the acoustic version of it from Coming Back Again.
And we were just kind of getting started, and we're finishing the album, and it is going to be at my house today.
Woohoo! I'm so excited.
Album, and we had Global Warning in the studio with us. Do you remember that?
Global Warning? Yeah, I remember them.
And you mentioned you were a DJ.
Somewhat. I play keyboards. I used to be a DJ at KUGS, a college university station at Western. And so I did that for about maybe 2.5 years, doing a DJ there, and I also play keyboards in a band and do live sound. So lots of sound work behind my experience.
And one day you took an album off the wall, a Screaming Trees album?
Yes, I did. I'm trying to remember the name of the song, though. Don't quite remember. Oh, Bed of Roses, that's what it was.
Oh, wow.
That's the one I always played.
And so,
I think that was the only one on it, too, because it was their single album. So it's like the only song I could play.
Awesome.
But it was a great one. Yay. Played it almost every week.
Well, Van has come a long way, and we started writing this maybe 3 years ago, the lyrics, and it's because he kind of had writer's block, and his prescription with my healing work was for him to write songs again.
Mm-hmm.
And who knew that I would co-write an album with him?
Yeah, who knew?
No idea. And the actual album has come back again. You can go to dina-marie.com if you want to check that out. We have the CD coming today, and we'll be doing some shows. But Legacy of Green, and we'll be playing that throughout the show, is about our earth and getting back to nature and how we've maybe gone too far in the wrong direction about the money and the gold and the things that weigh us down, the stuff. And maybe we need to get back to Mother Nature and our health and our physical selves.
I think we should, because Earth Day, that's on Monday, April 22nd. So we're almost there, and it's time.
Legacy of Green. And guess what I have for you? A download card from Mr. Ben Connor. Nate's filling in for Benny. So I was kind of excited to give you that. And here we go. We're going to start this show with the fact that I do healing work. And my goal is to get people back to Mother Nature, back to the things they enjoy, back to their purpose and their passion. And 2 years ago, I can't believe how time flies, I was doing healing work in Kauai at Dolphin Touch Wellness Center. And a woman walked in, a beautiful woman, Dawn McDaniels, and we basically did healing work together. She took my classes, and she told me her story. And I watched her on Facebook, and she was on the show when I got back and told her story. You can go to the archives for that. But she said, you need to connect with this person on Facebook. And it was Angie Peacock. And joining us this morning is Angie. Good morning, Angie.
Good morning.
So I do stories on fascinating people. I've been watching you on Facebook, and you are an amazing woman. And instead of me telling the story about you, I'd like you to tell our listeners about you.
So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. I joined the Army when I was 18, and I took off, and I went to see the world. And while I was gone, I had a series of trauma. It started with sexual assault when I was in South Korea by a fellow soldier who was a little bit higher ranking than me. And then I kind of like coped with that by like throwing myself into work, and you know, some friends helped me out. And then I re-enlisted for Germany and got promoted to sergeant. So I tried to like do my best to move on with my life, you know. And then I get to Germany, and about a year and a half later, we got deployed to Iraq, which I was completely prepared for. I trained for that the last 6 years or so in the Army. So we get to Iraq, and within like 30 days, I very quickly dropped down to 100 pounds. I like cheekbones, everything. I was just like really sickly looking. I had spurs and fainting and high blood pressure, all kinds of crazy stuff was happening to me. I didn't know what it was because there was no medical treatment available that early in the war. So this was 2003. So I was able to manage for about 6 months doing convoys, you know, driving through Baghdad. There was IEDs all over the place, all kinds of danger, like, everywhere. So I kind of, like, realized, like, I'm going to die in Iraq, either from this disease that I have, or it's from, you know, it's going to be from getting shot at or hitting an IED or something. So we had a change of command where we got a new commander, and she took one look at me and said, like, you did not look good. You need to get medical treatment. And I'm like, yeah, I know. So they sent me medically evacuated out to Germany. And when I got back to Germany, the very next day, I got word that our convoy got hit. So it was like, you know, our number was finally up. And my soldier came back on a stretcher, one of my soldiers, and he was in surgery, and they said I couldn't see him for like 24 hours. So I came back to see him. He started telling me his story about basically they hit an IED, and everybody was just kind of standing around, and like nobody knew what to do. And he was just sitting there bleeding, and he was terrified. And then it like took them a couple minutes before they realized like, oh, somebody is actually injured. So I just started feeling like this overwhelming guilt feeling like, oh my God, if I was there, that wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have driven down that street, you know? And I just hit some kind of breaking point where like, I just could not handle anything more that was such bad news, you know? So I looked in the hallway. I said, hey, I need to go. Like, I just needed to like get out of there and like gather myself. And I walked down the hallway, and I saw a sign that said psychiatry, and I thought, well, let me just go there and ask for help, because that's kind of like what we're told to do, you know? And when I got there, I was given a prescription for a benzodiazepine and clonopin, pretty common. And, of course, the doctor was wearing a uniform, so I didn't think to question. I'm just like, okay, I just need to feel better. Like, I need help. Like, I can't feel all these emotions, like, by myself. So that began, like, a series of medications to the point that in 2006, not only like 2 years later, I was on a combination of 17 medications at the same time. I was so out of it. I didn't leave my house for like 4 years. I lost my marriage because of that. I got addicted to opiate painkillers like you hear about now, but like this happened to me like 10 years ago, you know? So finally in 2006, I just was like, I don't know who I am anymore. Like, I feel crazy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I went to, I found a new psychiatrist, thank God, and I had just basically made up my mind, like, I'm just going to jump from the tallest building in St. Louis. Like, this is over. I cannot live one more day like this. And I met a doctor, and he said, who put you on all this medication? And I said, well, it was a combination of, like, civilian doctors and the VA. And he said, I'm taking you off. Can you, if I check you in tomorrow, will you take a bed? And I said, yes. So he checked me in, took me off about 10 of the drugs, left me on like 7. That day I made up my mind to quit everything. I quit alcohol, I quit everything, opiates, anything. I just wanted to like be a clean mind. So I stayed on some of the drugs that they were prescribing me, antidepressants and stuff like that, sleep meds. And then a couple years later, I still did not feel good. And I'm like, I don't know, like, what are my feelings anymore? Like, I just feel crappy all the time. I feel tired. I don't leave my house. I don't have any motivation. I remember telling the doctor, like, I don't feel any good feelings. Like, I don't know what gratitude feels like, being happy. I only know, like, anxiety and depression. So basically, I just said, I just want to get off of everything. Can I just go one at a time and go really slow and see what happens? So I don't even think I really knew, like, the power of that decision. But basically, it took me, like, 6 more years, finally, to get, like, off of everything. But the last drug was almost the same as the first drug. It was a benzodiazepine, and it was named lorazepam, or the other name is Ativan. And let me tell you that it almost killed me. And basically, as I tapered lower and lower, I got more and more symptomatic, and my doctor basically said, like, oh, well, your PTSD is getting worse. And I, like, didn't really know what that meant. And I'm like, okay. So then he said, come back in a month. And then I'd come back in a month, and I'm like, listen, now I have intrusive thoughts. And then he's like, okay, we'll come back in another month. And I'm like, okay, now I have suicidal thoughts. And then he's like, come back in 2 weeks. And I'm like, I don't think you get it. Like, I don't think I'm going to make it 2 weeks. Like, it's really strong, and it's scary, and it's terrifying, and I don't, something is happening to me. It's like something broke inside of my body. So, but I, like I said, I didn't know it was the drug doing that. Like, as I was tapering, I had no idea. So I checked in. Basically, I just thought, like, I'm going to kill myself. This is not good. So I checked myself in to the doctor's, you know, like the VA facility. I said, just take me off this drug. Obviously, it's not working, because I wouldn't be suicidal if it was working, you know. So they took me off, which was, like, probably, I mean, I think, like, probably saved my life. But it took me off cold turkey, which you're not supposed to do with the benzodiazepine. So basically, like, fried my nervous system completely. I had the worst withdrawal syndrome. Like, I can't even put into words the horrific suffering that I experienced for the next 18 months to 2 years. I'm now 3.5 years away from that last dose, and I still have, like, neurological and vision problems and my body just doesn't regulate stress correctly. I don't know. So anyway, through this process, I just like started to like really critically think about like what happened to me. Like, why was I so bad all those years? Was it really PTSD, like, and depression and anxiety and all these things? Or was it like a combination of, yes, I had trauma, but like all these drug side effects and then more drugs to cover up side effects, and like what happened to my brain? Because I am not the same person that I was like when I started this whole getting help thing, you know? So basically now, let me speed up, I guess, catch up. So there's a lot of good things that happened too during those years. You know, I did get involved in Wounded Warrior Project and did a lot of peer support, did a lot of programs that were like outside of, you know, medicine. So I did like equine therapy, service dogs. I went back to college. Doctors told me I would never make it in college, and I basically had to beg. And then like 2 years, they put me in an independent living program. They're like, you're not well enough to go to school. And then I finally was able to go to school, but I could only handle like part-time. And I'm happy to say that in 30 days, after being in school for almost 9 years, trying to get my degree, but I will finish with 4.0, hopefully, fingers crossed, from Master's in Social Work program at Washington University of St. Louis.
And so can I tell you, Angie, the blessing, and because I've been watching this for 4 years on the same, not, I've been watching someone else go through this. It's, I call it, it's schooling, right? And the fact that you're coming to a point where you are out there teaching and telling your story, to me, that's if there is a blessing, but it's an amazing, just talking with you the last two times on the phone, you have helped me. It's an understanding, you know? And so I am just so blessed that we were connected. I'm so happy to have you on the show. And you're just doing, I mean, I've been watching. I watch people. That's what I do. I have to thank Facebook because I also connected to someone else on your page yesterday. I love people telling their stories of this thing we're all going through. People have all kinds of pain and tragedy and things going on. But when we can actually work together and help one another through this, that's the human experience, I believe, in its best, and at its best.
Totally, totally. And, you know, to tell you the truth, like, getting through all those years of tapering and through the withdrawal syndrome, like, I would not be alive without other people helping me that were, like, a little bit ahead of me that had been through the process themselves. Like, my help wasn't coming from doctors that understood this. It was definitely from, like, human beings that have been through immense suffering and who understood, like, where I was coming from and didn't judge me for any of that, you know. So I don't think we do any of this alone by any means.
And you're at this point where you had a big, was it 2 days ago? You had a...
Yeah, I had a big event.
How did that go?
It was amazing. Oh, my gosh. So 2 days ago, I did a fellowship with Veterans of Foreign Wars, Student Veterans of America, so VFW-SVA. We went to D.C. We picked policy area. So I picked benzodiazepines, of course, because that's, like, what almost killed me, you know, most recently. And so I did like a policy focus on that. I did a bunch of research. We lobbied members of Congress. I had a lot of handouts. I was stopped by all these, you know, legislators' offices and pitched it and media, all kinds of things. It was very in-depth. So one part of my semester-long focus was to do an outreach event. So I did an event on Wednesday night, and I had about 20 people there. Some were college students. One was studying military policy, and then half of the room was military veterans. So I just kind of told my story. I presented the research about benzos, like how they increase the risk of suicide for veterans, double, almost like 2.5 times if you've ever had benzo exposure. I talked about falls and cognitive decline and, you know, that they shouldn't be prescribed longer than 2 to 4 weeks. In some cases, like I was prescribed them for 6 years, which is like against the FDA recommendations. So anyway, I just pitched everything. I told told my story. And I was really vulnerable, and it's really the first time I've ever told it, like, from start to finish, like, in a public setting, and I was sweating like you wouldn't believe, like, just so nervous. But what the magic thing that happened was, like, I just told my story, and then I kind of opened the floor and said, like, there's the research, there's my story, what do you guys think of what I had to say? Or what are your experiences within the mental health system and VA, and tell me, like, about what has helped and what has not helped. And, like, they were... I was shocked at, like, the stories I heard and just, like, you know, I don't want to go to the doctor because if I tell them that I'm experiencing suicide, they're going to put me in a hospital. You know, every time I go to them, all they do is throw pills at me. And then if I say I don't want pills, then I feel like the benefits are being threatened. So just all these, like, radical things were, you know, people critically thinking about what does help mean? What should I expect when I ask for help? Like, what expectations do I have for a doctor to help me? Like, what does work? So a lot of people really like therapy, but and they like to talk about things with somebody from the outside, and they like the equine therapy and the horses and the, you know, all these other things that, that supplement traditional care. But, you know, we do have a suicide crisis in the VA right now where there's 20 veterans per day that are killing themselves. And just in the last, like, week, there was 3 suicides in 2 different states. So it's like there's this emergency situation happening, but, like, we don't know how to fix it. So really it was just to get everybody together in a room and say, like, help. Like, what do we do? What works? What doesn't work? How can we help this from happening? Like, we're losing more veterans than we did in combat. This is horrible.
And in my healing work, and that's why Vanna and I wrote this album, because it was healing. We were expressing. And like I told you, some of the songs they're not uplifting, but you know what? That's what we were feeling or we were going through. And when we come back from break, I want to talk about some things that worked for you and I know worked for some other people that I've worked with in my healing work. You're listening to Lift Your Spirits with Dina Marie. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I still wonder if I won the day. In the morning. Aloha! Join me, Dina Marie, on the island of Kauai. Let me be a tour guide for your spirit and a travel agent for your soul. You'll receive daily healing sessions and experience fun, interactive outings to some of my favorite places, sacred sites, secluded beaches, and sunrises that will lift your spirits. Go beyond the tourist spots, meet fascinating locals, and leave with amazing memories. Retreats are based on your schedule and budget. For more information, visit liftyourspiritswithdinamarie.com.
Are you tired of the cold? Can't seem to get warm? Do you suffer from body aches, insomnia, or stress? Looking for relief? Why not experience the amazing health benefits of the Amethyst Crystal Biomat? The Biomat is an FDA Class 2 medical device. It uses NASA technology and produces the health benefits of far infrared and negative ions. The soothing and warming effect of the Biomat penetrates 6 to 8 inches into the body, and the healing benefits are amazing. For more information, visit dolphinbiomat.com or call us at 808-822-4414 today.
Elder Bay Grocery has been locally owned and operated by the same family for over 25 years. They're located at the south end of Kamano Island at the intersection of Mountain View and Elder Bay Road, and is less than 2 miles away from the Kamano Island and Kama Beach State Parks. Kara's Kitchen at Elder Bay Grocery offers burgers, soups, sub sandwiches, pizza, homemade baked goods, and free Wi-Fi for customers to stay connected while enjoying their affordable and family-friendly dining. Stop by to refuel the car or even treat the kids to a hand-scooped ice cream cone. For more information, visit ElgerBayGrocery.com. That's E-L-G-E-R BayGrocery.com. Or like Elder Bay Grocery on Facebook. It's always a great day at Elder Bay. And don't forget to stop in for the 21st annual Kamano Island Studio Tour Mother's Day weekend, May 10th, 11th, and 12th. Art lives on Kamano Island. Get inspired by the art and be amazed by the nature.
Wherever you go, Alternative Talk 1150 is here for you.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining us this morning. I'm really excited to have Angie Peacock on the phone with us. She's telling her story. And at this point, there's some things that work for Angie, and I want her to share the things that helped her heal. Angie, you want to share that part of the story?
So the first thing I started with was equine therapy, which is horses. And, you know, we would just do groundwork, walk around with the horses. I learned how to bathe them, and then we started riding, and then we would trail ride. And then I would do yoga on the horse, which is, like, pretty scary. Like, you're standing on a 1,500-pound horse with nothing to hold on to, you know?
Wow.
So just things like that. And really, that was my first introduction to, like, wow, civilian people care about me. They're not asking me what's wrong with me. It wasn't, like, focused on my symptoms. It was just, like, come out, ride, and have a good time, and be outside in the fresh air, you know? So then I did some other programs, Wounded Warrior Project, that were, like, what do they call it? Physical health and wellness. So I did CrossFit. There was a couple years where I would walk or run a 5K. I did all kinds of, like, physically demanding as much as I could because I do have, like, back and feet problems from the Army and all kinds of stuff. But I definitely got in touch with my body again, did things like that. Let's see what else. Oh, writing. Okay, so while I was in college, like, I just knew I needed something to, like, help me process kind of, like, what happened to me and what, like, I was experiencing at the time. So I always took writing or drawing classes. And writing, I really got into, like, poems and something called documentary poetics, where it's, like, you write, but you interweave, like, newspaper articles or news articles or video and, like, all this different kind of media. So I had a couple poems that were published that I was really kind of proud of, like, wow, I made something beautiful out of, like, such suffering. You know, so that was really important to me. Let me think. Art now, I mean, in, like, I think I want to be careful that, like, I'm not 100% healed. Like, I wish I could say that. But, like, every day is still hard, especially, like, just the nature of, like, long-term medications in my body for, like, 13 years. I'm not going to be, like, completely normal that quickly, you know? So I do have to, like, every day I have to do something to help me just, like, live as best as I can. So I really am focused on diet. I try to do yoga. I need to do more. And now after I hear your later segment, I'm going to probably push myself, but I do yoga like at least once a week. I walk every single day with the dog. I do EMDR therapy. That really helps me. I do hypnosis, massage, acupuncture when I can get my hands on it. So, I mean, I just think that every day I have to do stuff that keeps me alive and keeps me, you know, growing and about things. And, you know, I'm just in a continual process of growth. But I think the best part is, like, now that I don't have all these, like, chemicals in my system, I'm actually feeling everything, and I'm not afraid of, like, feeling something really strong. Like, I've learned to kind of just sit with it and accept it and work with it and not be so afraid and try to get rid of it. Like, oh my God, take a pill for that. Like, you don't want to feel that. So it's like I'm trying to be human again, you know.
And you're looking for natural cures. And in our first conversation, you said what's missing is the spiritual side. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think at one point in my journey, I read, like, over the course of, like, 3 years, I read, like, 300 books. And I literally read everything from, like, yoga philosophy to Buddhism, Hinduism, some of that really crazy stuff, like ascension studies, the Handbook for Higher Consciousness, Be Here Now, Eckhart Tolle, Byron Katie, like, just hundreds of books. And basically, like, the conclusion that I came to through reading all those books just for myself was just that, like, everybody is pretty onto it. Like, love is what matters. Like, seeing the truth in people instead of seeing, like, what they do to us. Like, seeing that the world is full of, like, light and happiness. And, like, there is, like, they always say, like, look for the helpers. But, like, it's hard to remember that when, like, you're suffering really, really bad. Mm-hmm. So I do my best, but, like, I try to focus on that. And, like, even just sitting still and feeling peace is, like, a huge blessing compared to where I've been and what kind of suffering that I've experienced just from trauma and medications and, you know, all the stuff I've been through. So just, like, a moment of peace is, like, my religion, really. It's just, like, my friends and crying a good cry and just sitting over a cup of tea and connecting with another human being. Like, that is what I live for now.
And human touch and that interaction. Yeah. And I did watch a video from somebody that was on your, you were sharing, and I just was watching some things, and how he had been in 4 different psych wards, and I'll say that, and had not been touched. No hugging, no talking, no expression. Yeah. And that's what we need right now, someone to talk to, someone who cares and who will listen. And human touch, you know. Sometimes you just want someone to hold your hand when you're going through something dark.
Actually, you're bringing tears to my eyes because through the course of all that, I literally lost the ability to, like, feel close to other people. And, you know, they kept telling me, like, that's PTSD. And then I did not have, like, an intimate sexual relationship with anyone for like over a decade, which like I'm really scary to admit. It's scary for me to admit that, but like people did not touch me and I did not want to like be in a social situation. I did not want to, like, it was like I lost the ability to even care that that existed as a part of being human. So like I've had part of my process is like I had to get a massage therapist that I trusted to say like, I just want you to touch me for 10 minutes, you know? I'm sorry, I'm crying.
No, you're making me cry too.
Like that, but yeah.
A good therapist. And I'm going to bring up real quick too about men. Medication, what I've learned through what's going on in Kauai and their young men and their older gentlemen who are natives, using medication takes away their masculinity. And when they lose that on top of everything else.
I lost that.
Yeah,
and I lost my femininity, my sexuality, the ability to touch other people. I even had, like a year ago, I was interviewed for another pretty major media piece. And I told her, like I said, it's just now that I like I want to get out of my house, or I want to do something, or I like want to have a friend. Like I haven't wanted to have a friend for like over 10 years. Like it's horrifying. And then when you tell the doctors that, they say like, oh well, that's part of your PTSD. But I'm sorry, I'm not really convinced of that. I'm just not, because like why all of a sudden is that even a thought in my mind, where before it wasn't? You know, now I'm like, wait a minute, something's missing from my life. I'm 39. I should have a boyfriend and go on dates and have friends like everybody else. But like, there's that part of me that is missing that I lost because of that everything I went through, you know? So it's definitely a huge part of this.
And the animal therapy is huge. And I did visit a farm on Woodby, and that's what they were doing. They were taking vets horseback riding. They were staying at their Airbnb, and just a small amount. But those people that are doing those things, and it's nonprofit, you know, we're doing it because it's the right thing to do, and we're making a difference. But I just, you know, anybody out there that feels, and you could have been in war, and maybe you're just having 10 years of not feeling alive anymore, you know. But that reach for a natural cure, you know, go volunteer somewhere, do something that you used to do as a kid, you know, like play music or art or creativity. That's another thing that I find, that if you can give people, everybody, something that they love to do that's creative and expressive, that makes a difference too.
Yeah, and I have to say one more thing. do not, if you're listening to this, do not just stop your meds. Like, please do not do that. This took me like over a decade to make this decision and do, you know, and I had doctors help me taper. There's a lot of information online. Can I mention a couple sites that helped me?
Sure. Yes, please.
Okay. One is the Inner Compass Initiative. And she has a project called the Withdrawal Project. She's been featured in like the New York Times and New Yorker. That website really educated me on a lot of stuff. Another one is Surviving Antidepressants. And the next one is Benzodiazepine Information Coalition, and the last one would be Benzo Buddies Forum. So like, all those places basically saved my life.
And I'm going to say, find a healthcare professional who listens to you. You know, listens to you. I had my doctor call me last year and say, Dina Marie, I retired, but I want to thank you because you were really involved in your care. And when I didn't listen, you came up with some research and blah, 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 and we did what I wanted to do, and he helped me with that. Once was just taking a month off from work because I was in pain and I couldn't work anymore. But it's you do need a healthcare professional that is good to you. And I fired mine before. I mean, but find someone that'll listen and reach out. I know when you're hurting, it's hard to reach out to other human beings. And I also want to say, for people that are supporting people either on medication or maybe trying to taper off, you got to self-care for yourself because you'll burn out too. And, you know, that's another whole show. But I just really, Angie, I'm so glad. And I do want to do another show with you later on and continue telling your story. And you have some things coming up. I mean, positive.
Yeah. So let's see, I graduate in less than 30 days. I cannot wait till that happens. And I still have to finish my internship, but you know, over the summer. But then there's a film coming out called Medicating Normal. We have a Facebook page right now. It's almost finished. We'll be starting to do screenings across the country. That's coming up, and there'll be a lot of clips available on YouTube that people can watch and share with a lot of experts in the field talking about like deprescribing and withdrawal syndromes and diagnosis and just like critically thinking about all aspects, you know, what helps and what doesn't, what can hurt some of us. Because like I have to say, like, some people can take meds and they're completely fine. I was just not one of those people, and I respect people have to do what is best for them, and I had to do what was best for me. So I just think it's important to have an informed choice. Like, you know, these are our own bodies. We can't just give our power over. it's best to learn about all the different aspects of healing, kind of like your show. And so that's coming up, and I'm not really sure what else. Like, I'm just kind of, even my therapist said, like, not having a plan is good. Like, you don't have to have a plan for everything.
Oh, and it opens you up for spontaneity and magic happening, and that's another spiritual side that's a lot more enjoyable than force, than, you know, we like the flow stuff. But you also know when you're going in the right direction, because doors just start to open and the right person's there for you, and you're helping me. And I know you're helping other people right now. And I think, too, that's when we wake up and we live, you know, a 24-hour whatever, it's nice to go to bed and know that we made a difference.
Yeah, totally.
And we've all, a lot of people been through experiences that I quit being a hypnotherapist because I couldn't go back anymore. I couldn't go back into people's lives, but the Reiki helped, you know, writing music. I come up with these prescriptions. Some are taking your dog for a walk, getting a pet, volunteering, Reiki or massage or any of those things, or you know, spending time alone, like you said, without planning anything and letting spirit drive. But, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I just think there's a lot of different things that can help people. And it doesn't have to just be like this one size fits all. Like, if you have this, this is what you need to do. Like, I had to go through 10,000 things that didn't work before I found stuff that did work for me. But it's just, you know, how do we do that? And how do we best support ourselves? Like, being curious about what can help me, what can, you know, just it's a journey, definitely.
And for me, I have a hard time asking for help. But what I say is, you know, if you're having one of those days, if you could just look up and just, I always say, help me, just help me. I don't know who's going to come out of the blue, but
yeah.
I went through a dark time and I was random strangers saying the exact right thing. Or I just cried when somebody would pick something off the floor that I dropped. I mean, I was in such a bad place. But when you, if you can, just look up and say, dear God, help me, or whatever you pray to. It doesn't even matter. You don't have to pray, but set that intention and you'll be amazed at the people that come into your life. And, yeah, I'm going to have you back. And one more time, give them some contact for you, the listeners.
Let's see. You can find me on Facebook. It's Ange, A-N-G, and then Peacock, but I don't spell it the same way. It's P-C-O-C-K. On Twitter, I think if you just search Angela Peacock, I'll pop up somewhere. Those are the two main places. I need to start blogging. I've just been so busy. So
yeah, you're busy going to school.
Yeah, you'll find me somewhere and very soon with my writing, if you're listening to this as an archive.
And if you go to Angie and then you like her page, she shares a lot. I just saw so many positive things. You know, thank you for sharing other people's stuff and sharing the news that things are hopeful. And again, we'll have you back. And one more time, the name of the movie?
It's called Medicating Normal. And there's a Facebook page. If you go hit like, you'll start getting updates pretty soon with the screening schedule and clips.
Yeah, you go to school and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Nina. Have a good one.
All right.
Bye.
Stay tuned. You're listening to Lift Your Spirits. We'll be right back.
Me up in red. I'm on fire, but I'm not dead. As I watch the sun go down, the moon becomes my lover.
Join us for the 9th Annual Green Home Tour on May 4th and 5th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily. Free fun for the whole family, this self-guided tour features green-built remodels and new homes from Seattle to Olympia and beyond, with over 40 sites. To download your tour map, visit nwgreenhometour.org. Get inspired by projects from all shades of green, from kitchen remodels to passive homes. Learn how to go solar, conserve water, lower energy bills, create a healthy home environment, and discover new ways to live more lightly on the earth. The Northwest Green Home Tour is presented by the Northwest Eco Building Guild, Green Home Solutions, City of Tacoma Environmental Services, Generations Credit Union, and Olympia Federal Credit Union. Register for tickets at nwgreenhometour.org and enter to win raffle prizes. Hope to see you there.
Conversation you won't find on the rest of the dial. Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey,
this is Dina Marie. You've heard me talking about writing songs with Mr. Van Conner. Well, I'm happy to say that our album is out now.
It's called Coming Back Again, and it features songs like Legacy of Green, Silent Universe, and the title track, Coming Back Again.
Our album, Coming Back Again, is now available for streaming and purchase at your favorite online retailer, including iTunes, Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, and many more.
Go to dina-marie.com. That's dina-marie.com for a full list of retailers.
Watching the sunrise, an ocean stands between us. Look into the sky. Think of second chances. Look into the past. A thousand miles between us. You know you're coming back. Oh yeah. You know you're coming back.
Thank you for joining us this morning. I have to tell a story real quick. I know a couple, Judy and Jeff Milton. Jeff has been on the show, actually, with Van Conner. That's pretty crazy. And then we had Judy on the show. Jeff and Judy lost their son. It was tragic. And then Jeff went through some stuff, and Van and Jeff shared their story. And then Judy decided to take up yoga and teaching it to first responders. And joining us this morning is Olivia Mead. Good morning, Olivia.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Who started that program?
Did you say who started that program?
Yeah, first responders yoga.
That was me. So, that would be me. I started this program in 2013 in Los Angeles. I've been a yoga teacher for the past 16 years, since 2003. But, you know, I really think part of the yoga practice is being of service, you know, and having our karma yoga. And I really, you know, I was teaching in those yoga studios, the trendy yoga studios in L.A. and New York and Vegas, where I had been living the past 16 years. And it wasn't serving my heart completely, you know, it to kind of have that westernized, typical yoga studio that I think people kind of have in their heads. And it wasn't serving me. And I wanted to serve my community. I really wanted to serve a population that is always there for us when we need them. And I actually started by teaching yoga specifically to veterans of post-traumatic stress, as well as active military. And that kind of funneled into first responders specifically. So I started by volunteering at Los Angeles Fire Department. And you know, it grew from there quite exponentially and unexpectedly, because it was working. So it was effective. We were getting buy-in, and the demand started to grow for it.
So what were the first signs that it may be helping them to you?
That they were coming to class, you know, and they kept coming to class. And, you know, when I first was, you know, given the permission to come in and volunteer at LAFD, their biggest concern was buy-in of who's going to show up. And, you know, they gave me a chance because of my background teaching vets and military. And also I had extensive talks and interviews with them. And they said to me that we're just afraid no one's going to show up. And I told them, I said, if no one shows up to the training center for yoga, I'm still going to do yoga in the space. So people can see that yoga is happening from 12 to 1 Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I'll tell you what, I was there, you know, a couple years, and there was only one time no one showed up. And that's because they had a Taco Tuesday with a taco truck come in. And I totally get it. I understand that Taco Tuesday can trump yoga sometimes. But people were coming. They were telling me that, you know, anecdotally, that they were sleeping at night. They were enjoying it. And it wasn't just the effectiveness of yoga, but the way I was presenting it. And that's what's different. What makes us distinct is that the branding and marketing of yoga commonly in the West is branded towards women. And so we're branding it towards the warrior culture. That's how we're presenting it. And I think that's why we're getting that buy-in.
Well, and you brought up sleep, which Angie and I did not bring up, which is huge first responders. If they're not sleeping, they're not going to be able to go to work the next day if it's a long term.
Oh, God. I mean, and that's just the beginning. You know, lack of sleep or sleep recovery or effective recovery, it's going to affect your performance. It's going to affect your brain. It's going to affect your personal life, your joy. It's the beginning of the end if you don't have effective sleep and recovery. You know, one of the things I say is that you are only as resilient as your ability to recover. And that includes effective sleep. And so what we're really trying to do is, with yoga, is turn the system on when it needs to be on and effectively be with stress, and then know how to effectively recover afterwards.
And if they get a good night's sleep, and that's maybe from the yoga, that's a major reason to continue doing it.
Absolutely. You know, there has to be proper activation and proper regulation afterwards. And yoga teaches both. I think there's this common misconception that yoga is sort of all passive, maybe laying on the mat and all about relaxation. When yoga is really training you to be elite in all aspects, including during challenges. So the more effective and when you know how to be on, right? We don't want them to be hyper-vigilant. That's kind of your system being out of your control when it's activated. So we want to teach how to be in activation, how to be on and working with stress. And then the flip side of that coin is how to be off duty as well, effectively. They both kind of need each other to have that effectiveness in both areas.
And then we were talking about anxiety and breathing. So, of course, it's going to mm-hmm. affect all of their life.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, you know, I was telling you earlier that I like to describe our tactical breathwork techniques as turning the calm button on the nervous system. So if there are a few ingredients in place, this is something anyone can do just for like a minute or so. But if you breathe through your nose and you breathe into your belly and you make sure your exhale is longer than your inhale, those are the ingredients you need to turn the calm button on your system. You know, our nervous system and brain and body is a machine, essentially. It's a system. And there is a manual to it. We're just not taught that there is a manual or how to read it, you know? And that's what yoga is doing, is it's teaching you the manual of your own self.
And I love going on retreats because by the time you're done, you remember all the things you're supposed to do, and then you can incorporate it when you go home. But a daily practice or every other day is amazing. And just thinking of, like, about the monkey mind, they call it, but it's the chatter. And I think for me, yoga, mm-hmm. you get back into your body, and then you might even talk to your body saying, ow, my knee hurts, or I'm tired. But what happens when you quiet your mind? What happens when you quiet your mind? What happens?
Well, gosh, you know, that the mind affects everything. So the nervous system, the body, it's going to follow the mind around like a puppy, right? And that's a very, very like basic understanding of post-traumatic stress, is that our physical body is here, but our mind and nervous system is somewhere else, right? So even if I'm in a perfectly safe space, but my mind starts to trail to a stressor or a traumatic event, the nervous system and your emotions are going to react to that, right? Not where the body is. So what we're doing with mindfulness or quieting the monkey mind is taking the mind from out there or in the past or the future or to things that don't exist, and then bringing it here and right now in an alert present state. And when you're in an alert presence in this moment, 99% of the time we're okay, right? 99% of the time we're safe, especially for the average citizen. And then say you're in a position where you're not safe, something's wrong in that present moment. If you're truly mindful, then you can effectively help yourself or help someone else. And so that's how it comes kind of back with first responders, is that their present moment is probably more dangerous than the average citizen, right? But if they're completely mindful in that moment, they can be extremely effective. This is brain science, where you make decisions from, verbal communication, right? Starting to interpret visual stimuli. You're more effective that way, so you can actually do your job better. And then you know how to quiet the mind afterwards so your brain doesn't stay in that emergency state.
And that was beautiful. You just said, because even people in traffic right now, still, if you can quiet your mind, right, because your body's responding to all your thoughts and where you're going and this and that, that's when I call it your small, still voice. I don't even know what the words are for it, but it's this brilliant aha moment where your light bulb goes off. And if you're in maybe you are a soldier, maybe you can literally save someone's life with that quick instinct that basically you can't get when you're stressed out.
Right. And I think the word for it is whatever you want the word to be. You know, it doesn't have to be a proper word. I like to give alternate words for a lot of these buzzwords nowadays, like mindfulness and resilience, right? So whatever word's going to, for your understanding, I think is going to be perfect. So I like that small, quiet voice is a great way of describing it. I like to use alert presence for mindfulness. I like to think of robustness or psychophysiological endurance for resilience. So whatever is going to match your experience of it, I think that's a great phrase or word to use.
And I was, for a minute, I say hunch. I got a hunch. it's a good business deal. It's a hunch. But yeah, again, there's words are just words, but I think that yoga is an amazing, and I'll say there's yoga, Reiki, and chakras. And 10 years ago when I said any of those words, it kind of made people not want to be in the same room with me and do some of my exercises. And now, you know, yoga and chakras are really close, and it's just energy and you know, getting in touch with your body,
yeah,
quieting your mind, and then stretching. Because we also got to talk about the strength you get from doing these poses.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and you said it perfectly with energy. The one thing that we all have in common is energy, right? Everything's vibrating. And so that's the chakra system and yoga. So it all centers around energy. And I think, you know, like you said, 10 years ago, you probably wouldn't have gotten such a great response, is that I think people are understanding that, wow, this is, even cops, you know, they're like, nothing's working for me. I think, you know, when I was brought into Los Angeles Police Department, I kind of joked a little bit because they, you know, their high command staff, they were losing them to heart attacks because the stress was so high. And it's kind of like their last resort. They called me in as a yoga teacher. They didn't know what else to do, right? They've tried everything. So I think that everyone's kind of turning to these energetic practices now because they're the thing that's actually working now when everything else has failed. And you know, you mentioned the body as well. You know, the real intention of yoga is optimal functioning of the whole system, psychophysiological. So that includes the body. The body and the mind are going to affect each other, and they're going to affect the nervous system. So if I don't take care of my body, the stress is going to remain in the tissues, and that's where the immobility comes from, and that's where the uncomfortableness comes from. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but if I don't do my yoga practice for a few days because of work or, you know, busyness we all have, I start to feel it mentally. You know, I start to feel unhappy, uncomfortable, I'm irritable. And then I have to think about, when was the last time I got to my yoga mat? And there's the answer for me, you know?
I exercise for my mind because that's when everything opens up for me. I have my kids say, Mom, go now. And, you know, it's really important for me.
Oh,
and that's
God,
where I get,
yeah,
I get all my insight. That's where I get my ideas. And I have to bring up the heart chakra. Let's bring up the heart chakra with men. And you were saying heart attacks. I call it the broken heart syndrome. But I love Jeff Milton, bless his beautiful heart, because now he knows how important it is to express yourself. And I think that's the message he's relaying to other firefighters, is that after a call, after things happen to us, we have got to talk about it or get some help or go to counseling. And I did Reiki at Pioneer Square. It's down in Seattle. It was mobile Reiki. And we were doing Reiki with firefighters because it was their event. And at first, we're weird, right? But you can't see it because it's energy, and it's opening your heart. And that's the main valve, right, between your head and your body. And so right now, men being able to express themselves, that's why, you know, with Angie writing poems or Van writing music and me writing with him, it opens that part of yourself, that expression. So the heart chakra.
I want to, you know, kind of back that up with not only the heart being open to express, but let's encourage the other people around, and I think it might even start with this, is to open your heart to listen. Because if someone's opening their heart to express and what they're receiving is either being made fun of or not being, or someone sort of trying to fix what they're expressing, you know, if we're just open to sit there and listen to someone's expression or whatever that is, I think that's an important piece too. And I think that everyone might be more willing to open, and someone's heart and throat chakra need to be open to be able to receive messages as well. You know, so you can open it just thinking of, or working on that, thinking of how you're serving other people by having that open energy. And then maybe the next step would be you expressing yourself, if that makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense, especially when I express something on Facebook that I think is just fairly innocent, and it turns out that I get shut down by people I love. You know, so I understand the whole listening thing is so important, and we're all so different, and we all have different views, you know, and there's a point where you can pull some aside and have a conversation, agree to disagree. But you're right, that throat chakra and that heart chakra are so essential right now. That's how we get to our higher chakras, right? By opening up and talking about how we feel and being passionate and having a purpose and letting other people have their purposes and their passions. There, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, no, it's true. And this kind of goes back to the buy-in or acceptance of, you know, first responders doing this stuff as well, is that it's okay for everyone to have a different path of expression. And even, I'll tell you the story, when I would teach yoga, there was a student I had in the police academy, loved it. Everything was great, right? And we did a survey at the end, and he said, yes, I'll recommend yoga to other officers, and yes, it should be in the department always. And then the very last line was, will you continue to practice yoga? And he said, no. And so I actually wrote a follow-up email. I was like, what's that about? You know, you were such a fan. And he said, oh, because I'm a cyclist. And I do the exact same thing that you are teaching when I'm on my bike. I'm doing my breath work. We don't call it mantra. We call it something else, but it's basically mantra practice. And I'm like, you know what? Great. So everyone can have a different path of expression or a different path of healing or ability to stay balanced. And I think our job as people of the world, right, we all need to support each other, is to be cool. Unless someone's hurting someone, be cool with someone else's journey and path, whether it's yoga or cycling or running. Listen, I'm not a runner. I only run when chased, right? But I'm not going to tell someone else, you're a fool for running. Right? We all have our own experience. And you mentioned Facebook and posting and stuff. God, that is really where we see people's egos and shut down consciousness in full form, you know? And because behind a computer, it's so easy for the closed mind and heart and ego to take the driver's seat.
So that open-minded is an amazing place to be, because you don't have to take it in and bring it into your life, but let's just think about being open-minded, and you get that in yoga. I think so.
Oh, yeah, 100%. First step, you got to be open-minded to step on a yoga mat and know why you're there, you know? No, well, I'm not here to try to stretch my hamstring. I'm here to try to stretch my spirit.
There, I love that. And I was so stoked because you're doing something in Seattle. It sold out so quickly. So give everybody your contact so they can reach out to you if you come back or you're doing something around the country that they can participate
in. Yeah. Absolutely. So it's yogaforfirstresponders.org. Same name on all of the social media platforms. You can, if you have any questions, you can email our organization. It's info at yogaforfirstresponders.org. And we have a training coming up in Seattle at the fire department. And yeah, unexpectedly, we got some good press. And so unexpectedly, it sold out very, very quickly. But we do have a training coming up in the fall, and this is the first time I'm telling people that it's going to be in Texas. We haven't announced that yet, so if you're listening, it's going to be in Texas. And if we have enough demand back in Seattle, we would love to come back to Seattle in the future.
Well, I just want to thank you and Judy Milton, who is now teaching and doing first responders work, and Jeff Milton I love them. I'm calling them Earth Angels right now.
They're fabulous. We've had a great time with them. And Judy came to our training at Chicago Police Department, and hoping to make her a really robust teacher in the Seattle area.
Oh, the story will continue. So thank you, Olivia, and I'll watch you on Facebook.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for talking. I appreciate it.
Yay. Well, if you want to reach out to me, it's dina@dina-marie.com. Our album's on there. You can go to that website and check me out on Facebook, Instagram. But yeah, I'm pretty excited that I got those two people on the show, and I wish everyone a great week. Join us next week for more people, places, and activities that'll lift your spirits.
All the cold that weighs me down. All the cold that weighs me down. All the cold that weighs me down.